realized till yesterday afternoon that there was
a conflict. Everything is confused. Okay, Yom HaKippurim, one is not permitted to do malacha. All the 39 malachas are prohibited. The Gemara had one opinion, which was totally rejected, that it's permissible to carry on Yom Kippur. If you have an Erev, of course, you're allowed to carry on Shabbos, but if there's no Erev, are you permitted to carry outside of the Erev? So many Balabatim carry their Machzorim to Shul outside of the Erev. So the Talmud comes to the conclusion that this is not an accepted opinion. One is not permitted to carry on Yom Kippur. All the 39 Malachas that apply on Shabbos carry over to Yom HaKippur. In addition to the Malachas, the Mishnah lists off the Chamisha Inuyim, the five forms of Ta'anuas Nafshasechem that are required. One is achilas shtia, one is neither permitted to eat or to drink. In addition to the chamisha inuyim, you have the others. You have sicha, rechitza, washing the body, smearing on oil on the body, wearing shoes, nilas al sandal, and tashmish amita, marital relations. The Gemara points out there is only kores on achilas shtia, and if one violates the other four inuyim, there is no punishment of kores. This is based on psukim. So this leads the Rabbi Natam to develop his opinion that the only biblical prohibition is achilas shtia. Rabbi Natam thinks logically it doesn't make sense to have one pasuk ta'anuas nafshasechem, which includes five prohibitions, achilas shtia, rechitza, sicha, nilas hasanda, tashmish amita, and there's only chorus on one and no chorus on the other four, so it must be the other four are only an asmachta mid rabbanan, and only the achilas shtia is min hatorah. The Rambam clearly does not agree. The Rambam thinks that all the chamisha inuyim are min hatorah. And nonetheless, there's only chorus on achilas shtia, and there's no chorus on the other. It's not really the argument of the Rabbi Natam. How can you have one pasuk that has five things included, and one has chorus and four don't? Not really such a compelling argument, the Rambam thinks. We find by dam, you have the pasuk says, you're not permitted to eat dam. And the Gemara says that there's only, and the Chumash says, if a person eats dam, kikol echal dam, and ichrusa, yechayv chorus. And the Gemara says, chorus is only on dam shahanashama yotzibo. When you slaughter an animal, so first a little bit of blood starts to come out, so that's not the dam that kills the animal. The Gemara says the colors of the blood start to change, and when there's not enough blood for the animal to remain alive, so that blood, dam shahanashama yotzibo, that blood is koris. Then let's say I take a chicken and I squeeze out the blood. Once you cook the blood, so the Gemara says dam shebishla is only midirabanan. But let's say before you cook the blood. So if I take out meat and I squeeze out the blood and I'll drink it, that's dam ha'ivarim. That's a biblical prohibition, but there's no koris on that. There's only koris on dam ha'konos belev, on dam shanashama yotzibo, and dam ha'konos belev. If you take a dead animal and you take the heart and the blood in the heart, it's not the blood in the capillaries. The blood in the heart is a separate blood. So that there would be koris on. So you have one prohibition, one pasuk, you're not allowed to eat dam, and different kinds of dam are included, and some of them have kores, some of them don't have kores, and they're all minatur. It's not that something is an asmachta midirabban. So that's why the Rambam is not so surprised. The Rambam thinks that all the chamisha inuyim are prohibited minatura, and there's only kores on achilas shtia, and the others there is no kores. One is not permitted to eat on Yom Kippur even less than the shear. The Mishnah discusses what exactly is the shear. Even chatzi shear is aser. The Gemara has a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shlokish. That's we have this famous dispute, the beginning of the last perek in Yuma, whether chatzi shear is aser min haTorah or aser min haRabbanan. The accepted opinion is like Rabbi Yochanan that a chatzi shear, even to eat less than the shear of food or beverage, is aser min haTorah. So the only one is permitted to eat on Yom Kippur, even a chatzi shear, is one a case where there's either a vadai sakana or a suffix sakana or even a svek sveka of a sakana, even the slightest, furthest suffix possible, unless it's such a suffix sakana that people are just not nervous about. So then that's not doiche Shabbos, not doiche Yom Kippur, it's not doiche kol haTorah kula. But any slight suffix that normal people are nervous about, sometimes persons are mishugana. So he's nervous about the one chance in 5 billion trillion zillion. So we tell him, calm down. That's not called a suffix sakon.
Suffix of death or suffix of something else? Suffix of death or suffix of something else?
Suffix of death. Suffix sakon means that a person will die. Doesn't mean he'll die immediately. It means his life will be shortened. I remember there was when I was in the rabbinate, so that's the shaila every rabbi has is before Yom Kippur. There's some people who just have to eat. So you have to paskin who's allowed to eat, who's not allowed to eat. And so one of the Balabatim told me that his wife, his first wife, died younger than she should have. She suffered from a certain condition. And the doctors and the rabbis came to the conclusion that there's no suffix sakana. There wasn't a sakana. She wasn't going to die on Yom Kippur if she fasted on Yom Kippur. But if she would have eaten on Yom Kippur, she would have lived on another couple of years. That's also called a suffix sakana. Suffix sakana means if one's life may possibly be shortened by 5 minutes because of the fact that you're fasting on Yom Kippur. Normal healthy people are not going to lose their lives. There is an opinion which is not accepted in Shulchan Aruch that loss of a limb is also called suffix sakana, loss of life or limb. But that's not the accepted opinion. And Meiri has that. Our reading in the Gemara, our Girsa in the Gemara is just not so. Whenever there's any slight suffix sakana whatsoever, not one is not permitted to be machmer. There is no minas chasidus to be machmer and to fast. There is a sefer isa v'heter. When you learn Shulchan Aruch, you're a day, so you see they quote the sefer isa v'heter on every page. Isa v'heter was written by Rabbeinu Yoina, not the famous Rabbeinu Yoina Girondi from Spain, the mechutin of the Ramban, but rather Rabbeinu Yoina wrote on Brochas Talmidei Rabbeinu Yoina. He wrote the Shari Tshuva that a lot of people read. This is Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi, wrote this sefer Isa v'heter. He never quotes from the Ramban, from the Chach Misvar. He only quotes Rashi and the Balei HaTosfos. This Rabbeinu Yoina, he was from Ashkenaz. So in the sefer Isa v'heter, the Rabbeinu Yoina, Isa v'heter ha'aruch. That's how it's known. Isa v'heter ha'aruch. So he writes, he identifies by name one of the Balei HaTosfos, not one of the famous Balei HaTosfos, who was deathly sick before Yom Kippur. And the doctors told him, if he eats on Yom Kippur, he may survive. If he doesn't eat, for sure he's going to die. And if he eats, he probably will die anyway. But there's a chance that if he eats on Yom Kippur, he may survive. So he decided, Ein Sofik Moitzim Midei Vadai, he decided he's not going to eat on Yom Kippur, and as predicted, he died. He died a few days later. So all of the Balei HaTosfos say that he did wrong, even if he's Vadai deathly sick. And it's a sex faker that maybe by eating this will extend his life. The din required, din says it's permissible and required to eat on Yom Kippur. I remember once a woman was telling me she has cancer for years already, and she has to take a certain pill every day to control the cancer. It shouldn't go out of hand, but on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur she doesn't take the pill. I said, are you crazy? So she said no, and she's still here. She's already 20 years later, she's still here to talk about it. I said, I wouldn't allow it. The din is that whatever is a sex faker of a suffix sakana, you're not permitted to fast on Yom Kippur. The Gemara has a rule discussed at length in the last parak in Yuma that if a person's life is endangered and he has to eat non-kosher food in order to save his life, let's say a person is in the army and they only give you non-kosher food, a person is in prison, they only give you non-kosher food, so what are you going to do? You're not going to eat the non-kosher food, you'll die. You die from malnutrition, so you have no choice. So what if you have a choice of eating two non-kosher foods? One is more seriously treif than the other. What do you mean one is worse? One is chelev that has an isa karis, and one is plain old nevela that has an isa lav. And one is tevel that has misa b'dei shamayim, and one is karis. One is chelev adam that has karis. A karis is considered worse than misa b'dei shamayim, so the macholas asuris that has a punishment of karis is considered mochomer than the macholas asuris that has a punishment of misa b'dei shamayim. So the Gemara has a long discussion to determine what's the hierarchy of isurim, which macholas asuris, which non-kosher food is more chomer than which, and so on and so forth. And the same is true regarding, let's say, Shabbos. Doctors, nurses are at home. Let's say a person is sick and he needs chilul Shabbos in order to save his life. So should you have a choice, should I be machal Shabbos this way or that way? However I'll do it, I'll be in violation of an Isser. One way I'll be in violation of a biblical Isser, and the other way I'll be in violation of a rabbinical Isser. So it's less chomer to violate the Isser derabbanan than to violate the Isser deraisa. And then within Isurim derabbanan you have different levels. One is a more chomer dik Isser than the other. So the Paskim have long discussions about this. What's considered machila moso? Hakal hakal tchila. We feed the patient who has to eat non-kosher food. We feed him the iser macholas asuris, which is less chomer.
Shouldn't it just be kis veronis, where he wouldn't be chayv anyways?
Right. It's permissible and obligatory to eat, but still
so
the Gemara.
Once he has the status of an onus, then what does it matter?
Not onus, because onus is a ptur b'di'evit. This is bikoach nefesh. Is mutar lachatchila. Bikoach nefesh a mitzvah to eat it. But still, the Gemara still has a din that he should eat machila mosa hakal hakal tchila. whichever is less severe in Issa.
I don't understand where does the Gemara get that from.
Good question. Some commentaries claim this whole din is only midirabbanan. Others say no, that you only have a heter to violate. You only have a heter to violate an iser in the Torah if you have no choice, if you need it to save your life. You can save your life by eating the less chametik iser, so you don't really have a heter to violate the more chametik iser. So some say it's there, right? So others say it's only a din midirabbanan. So that's why on Yom Kippur, what's usually assumed is that if a person has to eat on Yom Kippur in order to save his life, and he can either eat the whole meal at one time, which is a shir mole, a full shir of achil, a full shir of shtiya, that should carry with it a punishment of koris, he has a het of pikuach nefesh. Or the person can eat pachas mikashir. They'll eat a little bit now and drink a little bit now, less than the shir. Achil shtiya are not mitzar from zem zeh because they're different shiurim. Achil is one shir, we'll get to the shirim soon, and shtiya is a different shir. So a person can have a less of pachas mikashir achila and pachas mikashir shtiya, and then pause a little bit, and then have again pachas mikashir achila and pachas mikashir shtiya. So if a person eats pachas mikashir, true, he's violating a biblical prohibition, chatzi shir is asim in HaTorah, but there's no chorus on that. There's only chorus and malchus if you violate the full shir. So that's why in Shulchan Aruch it's recommended that if a person is in a situation of sakana as far as eating on Yom Kippur is concerned, and we tell him he's permitted to eat, he's obligated to eat, if it's possible to save his life by eating pachas mikashir, he should do like that, because that is considered hakala kal tchila, because the chatzis shir is less of an iser, even though chatzis shir is asma natar, it's less of an iser than violating the shir shalom.
Just a technical point, if the person does end up having to eat on Yom Kippur, I'm assuming he would bench, but then would he say some sort of form of the Alev Yavol?
That's a dispute in Shulchan Aruch. One who has to eat bread on Yom Kippur has to wash Netilas Yadayim in advance. If he has to eat bread, then the question is, does he say Alev Yavol? So that's a dispute. Then there's a dispute also, should he recite Kiddush or not? And even if one assumes that on a normal Yom Kippur he doesn't recite Kiddush, but this year it's Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos. So on Shabbos all year long you say Kiddush. And maybe this year the Chayla who eats should say Kiddush. The accepted opinion is you don't say the Yalav Yavai and you don't say the Kiddush.
How long does he have to wait in between the two Shiurim?
We're going to get to that in a minute. They have in the biography of the Sachet Shavah Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer, he died 100 years ago. Someone told me that it was just the 100th anniversary of his death a couple of months ago. So the Avnei Nezer was a famous Hasidic Rebbe. So as a child, he was known as a very brilliant genius. So he went home, his father was a rabbi, he went home in the middle of davening and he ate, and he came back to shul. So the father asked him, Avrei Male, did you say Kiddush? So he said, no. So he said, how come you didn't say Kiddush? So he said, because the whole din of children, the chayv and chinuch, to do mitzvahs, because when they're going to grow up later, they're going to be obligated to do it. So when I'm going to grow up after bar mitzvah, I'm not going to eat on Yom Kippur. So therefore, there's no chinuch. It's a bright answer. That's taka correct. That is the din. That a chayla who eats on Yom Kippur does not say Yalav Yavah in the Bichas HaMazon, and he does not recite Kiddush. What is the shir? So the shir, the volume of food you have, non-kosher food, in order to get malchus, or the volume of non-kosher beverages in order to get malchus for drinking non-kosher, let's say wine of orla, klei akerem. So the shir for food is always kezayis, and the shir for drinking, the Rambam's opinion, not everybody agrees, Taisa doesn't agree, the Rambam's opinion, as quoted in Shulchan Aruch, is revius. Revius is the volume of an egg and a half. The eggs that we see are usually large eggs. Supposed to be a beitza beitanis, an average size egg. So visualize that. We never see average size eggs. They make mayonnaise out of them. They never sell them in the stores. In the stores, they only sell large eggs or jumbo eggs. So if they visualize an egg that's a little smaller than the eggs that you see in the store, so that'll be a beitza beitanis. So a beitza umachza, the volume of an egg and a half, is the revius halug. That's a revius. How much is a kazayas? How big is an olive? They're different. There are zeisim, there are large olives and small olives and medium-sized olives. So the din is medium-sized olives. Which are the two extremes? How are you going to know what's a medium-sized olive? So the Rishonim have a big debate. Some say that it's the volume of a half of an egg, small, medium-sized egg, smaller than the eggs that we have. Some say the volume of a third of an egg. So the different opinions, what's a kazayis? So that's as far as all other non-kosher foods. the shiur shalem, the full shiur to get malchus or to be chayv kores for eating chela v'dam, would be a kezias of food, the volume of an olive's worth of food, which is either chatzi beitza or shlish beitza, and then a revius of drinking. A revius is a beitza machza, the volume of an egg and a half. On Yom Kippur, because the pasuk doesn't say don't eat, don't drink, the pasuk says ta'anu esnaf shesechem, v'hinisim esnaf shesechem, ha'nefesh ha'shalos se'une, v'nichrosa. The pasuk never says eating and drinking, it only talks about inui. So the Gemara says the rabbis established that it's a totally different shiur, it doesn't correspond to the din and kol ha'torah kulo. With respect to drinking, the shiur is less and than it is in treifas. In respect to eating, the shiur is larger. So with respect to eating food on Yom Kippur, the shiur is koseves hagasa. Koseves hagasa is a little smaller than a beitzo, but it's much bigger than a kazayis. Either kazayis is a chatzi beitzo or shlish beitzo. So usually when you have a patient and a chola who has to eat on Yom Kippur, so the rabbanim have to tell him how much food he can eat, and he has to wait a couple of minutes in between this eating and that eating. So they tell him they in hotels, a lot, some people have it in their private homes, they have a container that holds an egg. So the container that holds an egg cup, container holds an egg, and part of the egg sticks up on top. So the container holds an egg is the volume of a medium-sized egg. We usually have large-sized eggs, but this container only holds 80% of the egg, and 20% of the egg is sticking up on top. So that's the size, that's the volume of a normal size beitza beinonis. So you can stuff in as much food as you want into that container, and that's less than the shiur. Because the shiur of koseves hagasa, the shiur for eating on Yom Kippur, is slightly larger than an egg. And then the shiur for drinking on Yom Kippur is smaller than the shiur usually is. The shiur for drinking usually is revius, and on Yom Kippur the shiur is maloy lugmov, which is a rov revius for an adam beinoni, which is much less. How long do you have to wait between eating a little bit now and eating a little bit later in order to lower the level of the isur, that it should be an isur kal of chatzi shiur as opposed to an isur kores of a shiur shalem? So with respect to eating food, the shiur tziruf is torka de achilas pras, the amount of time that it would take to eat a pras. Now, what is exactly a pras? So the Mishnah talks about a loaf that's mazon shtei sudas, a loaf of bread that's enough bread to supply you for two meals. How big is that? What's the relevance of a loaf of bread for two sudas? So that's for erevei tchumen. If you want to walk chutz l'tum, so you have to leave mazon shtei sudas in a certain location, and that is considered your kind of shvis over there. Then you can go further. So how much bread do you need? What's considered mazon shtei sudas? So that's a machlokes in the Mishnah and a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. Whether mazon shtei sudas of bread, how much bread does a normal person eat in two meals, is either 8 beitzim or 6 beitzim. The machlokes is being how much is mazon sudach, is how much does a normal person eat, how much bread does a normal person eat in the days of the Tanoim in one meal. Is it 3 kibbeitzim or is it 4 kibbeitzim? So that's a machlokes hatanoim. So the Chasam Sofer is quoted by the Mishnah Brura as having established, very, very questionable. The Chasam Sofer writes a whole tshuva, a whole fantastic, with great imagination, he figures out a whole calculation that it's 9 minutes. Torka de Achilas Pras is 9 minutes. And that's all the Mishnah Brura quotes. Most disagree with the Chasam Sofer and say that it's much shorter a time period, much less than 9 minutes. But if a person, usually the person is not so sick that he has to eat so much. Usually you recommend to people they should eat a little bit now, wait 9 minutes, and then eat a little bit later in case there's a suffix sakana. What is the shiur tziruf for drinking? So that's a big machlekes, the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid writes that it says in the Gemara, and that's what it says in the Gemara. The Ravid usually argues with the Rambam. Rambam writes something that does not correspond to the Gemara, and the Ravid says, what are you talking about? It doesn't say that like that in the Gemara. So the Ravid writes over the Gemara in Maseches Krisis that the same shiur terke de achilas pras applies to drinking beverages as well. If I'll drink a little bit now, a little bit later, how close together do the two shtiyas have to be that they'll be mitzdarf, and how far apart do they have to be? So the Gemara increases, says terke de achilas pras, the same amount of time. So the Chasam Sofer claims that it's 9 minutes, so it'll be 9 minutes. The Rambam writes not so. The Rambam writes that by shtiyah, the shiur is to drink The revius toke de shtias revius, no pause whatsoever. So we usually machma like the rabbit over here. It's a chumer that you should pause if you want to have pachas pachas mikashir. So you should drink a little bit now. Person is a choyle mesukan, but he's not in such a sakana that he has to drink the whole glass of the beverage in one shot. So you should take a little bit now. Wait 9 minutes and take a little bit later.
According to the Rambam, as long as you pause any amount, that's okay?
Yeah.
In drinking?
Yeah. If you just pause a little bit in between, that would be enough. So the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Yom HaKippurim quotes the Machlekes, the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Kar quotes the Machlekes, the Rambam and the Ravid, and they always recommend to be Machmer for the Ravid, because that's what it says in the Gemara, that the Shir Tzirah for beverages is the same as the Shir Tzirah for Oichlim. The Menchas Chinuch doesn't quote the Chasam Sefer, but he totally argues with what he said. Menchas Chinuch says you can't give a stand, you can't give a shir 9 minutes for everything. You can't give a shir for everything. He claims that tokad achilos pras depends on each food or each beverage. How long would it take you to eat 4 beitzim of this food? So drinking beverages, you can drink a 3 or 4 beitzim of a beverage much quicker than eating 3 or 4 beitzim of eggs, of 3 or 4 beitzim of bread. So he claims, Menachas Chinuch claims, he can't give a standard shear for all foods and all beverages. Every food and beverage has to have his own shear. How much is Turkad Achilos Pras? The Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Valozhin. The Yeshiva in Valozhin was founded by the student of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Chaim Valozhiner. Yeshiva University, originally the Yeshiva part that was founded years ago, was known as Eitz Chaim. That was the name of the Yeshiva in Valozhin. Originally, there were 2 yeshivas but combined. So one was Eitz Chaim, one was the Yeshiva of Yitzchak Aharonot. That was founded later. So Eitz Chaim was supposed to be patterned after the Yeshiva in Valozhin. So the Valozhin Yeshiva was founded by Rav Chaim Valozhin. It lasted for 90 years. Then it was closed by the Russian government in 1891, something like that, 1892 or so. They thought that it was a hotbed of revolutionaries. They never knew exactly why it was closed. No one ever understood why. But the Russian government just released all of the secret files of the NKVD, of the secret service that they used to have. So now they discovered what was going on. There was machlekes in the yeshiva in the later days. They had all the Jews who wanted to go to university. At that time, there was some anti-Semitism. They didn't allow Jews to go to university. So they wanted some intellectual challenge. So they all came to the yeshiva. So they had Bialik. They had a whole bunch of characters that really didn't belong in the yeshiva. Bialik wrote a beautiful story about the masmid, a whole poem about the masmid learning in the yeshiva. But he was not from the strong learners in Valozhin. That other people who weren't observant at all, they didn't belong there at all. So there was a lot of machlokes going on in Valozhin about different issues. So they massed to the government. They were angry at the way the yeshiva was being run. So they massed to the government that there are a lot of revolutionaries there. So that's why the government came and they closed it down. Anyway, so the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Valozhin for the last 35 years. That's unbelievable. 35 years to be the president of a university. And he survived many attempted coups. He was not a direct descendant of Rav Chaim Valozhin. He married into the family. And the other members of the family made fun of him. They didn't think too highly of him. But he survived all the attempted coups, and he was the Rosh Yeshiva until he and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who married his granddaughter of the Netziv, both decided with a big conference of many rabbanim to close the yeshiva. They felt they had to close the yeshiva. They were pressured by the government to close the yeshiva. So the Netziv writes, he came to learn in the yeshiva before his bar mitzvah. He got married, right? He got married to the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter after his bar mitzvah. His wife was quite a few years older than him. So he writes in his commentary on the Shiltas, which he wrote as a teenager, that he heard from Rabbi David Tebel. Rabbi David Tebel is the author of the Nachlas David, who is a student of Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner, from the first group of students who learned in Valozhin. He heard from Rabbi David Tebel that the psak in the yeshiva always was based on the psak of Rabbi Chaim Valozhiner, that this din, machila mosa pachas pachas mikashir, that if you have a person whose life may be in danger, so we tell him to eat on Yom Kippur, tell him to eat less than a shear and wait 9 minutes and then eat a little bit less than a shear and so on. That's only if the person so far is healthy. We're afraid that by fasting he may become sick. What if the person already is deathly sick? He already has a condition. He just had surgery and he's a cholish yesh bo sakana already. Not that he may become a cholish, he already is a cholish. So then the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Magen Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch and the Hilchos Shabbos quotes the Magen Mishnah that if a person is already in a matzav, he's already in a state of the chelus sheyesh bo sakana, so then you have to give him kol tzarachov. You take care of all of his needs. You don't just take care of the needs to the extent that it's necessary to save his life. You take care of all of the needs that he has. So based on that, Rav David Temple said the Rav Chaim Volozhin paskins, you give him regular meals. You don't have to give him pachas pachas mikashir. This Rabbi Soloveitchik made this famous. Rabbi Soloveitchik said when his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, took his first rabbinical position in Europe, he had a few rabbinical positions in Europe, when he took his first position, so his father, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, made him promise that he'll paskin like this psak. He'll follow this psak, that a chayla sheyesh b'sakana already, you don't tell him to eat pachas pachas mikashir. You tell him to eat regular meals. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Hilchos Shabbos, this position of the Magen Mishnah, that a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, you take care of kol tzarachov, not only those needs that are clearly necessary in order to save his life, everything you treat him like a regular weekday, and the Mishnah Berurah is not happy about that psak. Mishnah Berurah has a whole series of kashas, and he thinks we shouldn't follow the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, we shouldn't permit kol tzarachov. You're only allowed to be mechal Shabbos to the extent that it's necessary to save the patient's life. But then the Mishnah Berurah says, but the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Magen Mishnah, quotes a heter. So he says, okay, if the malacha that you're talking about is only an issa derabanan, then you can rely on the Magen Mishnah. But with respect to real issa deraisa, the Mishnah Berurah comes to the conclusion after a long comment in the Bir Halacha, you should not follow the Shulchan Aruch. And Rav Velvela Soloveitchik, the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, has in his sefer on the Rambam, he has a long essay where he enters up all the kashas of the Mishnah Berurah, and he thinks that his father's psak is correct. But it's not really his father's psak. It's not from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. This is from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, and it's based on the Magen Avraham. It's based on the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, that if a person is already a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, so then you don't even try to arrange that he should eat pachas pachas mikashir. The common practice by all the Rabbanim today is the way it says in the Mishnah Berurah, that you always encourage the people to have pachas pachas mikashir, even if already is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana. And the Soloveitchik family, they insist on carrying on their tradition from Volozhiner Yeshiva, from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, based on the Magen Avraham, that then if the person is already a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, you don't insist on the pachas pachas mikashir.
Rabbi, you mentioned about the size of the shear, and Rabbi said something about Maloy Lugmav, but also Rabbi is, so which, and catch that.
A Maloy Lugmav is a rov Rabbi is by an Adam Beinani. Maloy Lugmav, the Mishnah says, really depends on the size of one's mouth. If a person is a giant, so the Maloy Lugmav is bigger. If a person is a midget, so the Maloy Lugmav is smaller. By an average size mouth, it's going to be a rov revius.
So which one's applicable to Yom Kippur?
So the shear, usually for all treifas, the shear is revius. And Yom Kippur, because it says ve'inisem, it depends on eina nefesh. So here the shear for drinking is smaller than usually, and the shear for eating is larger than usually. Shear for eating treifas all over is kezayis, and on Yom Kippur the shear is kosevis agasa, which is much more than a kezayis. Way more than a kezayis. So achila shtia is under control. Okay, rechitza, one is not permitted to bathe, even cold water, and even etzbaktana, even a miut of the body. Not only rov haguf, even miut of the guf is also not permissible. Some rishonim are of the opinion. Thank you very much. Some rishonim, some commentaries are of the opinion that bathing, if you take a whole shower, a whole bath, that's a biblical prohibition. But just to wash your hands, to wash less than 50% of the body, that's only midirabbanim. May or may not be correct. It doesn't matter too much because the dinim are still the same in the Shulchan Aruch. We do permit bathing under certain circumstances. For example, rechitza shel mitzvah, a kohen wants to duchen on Yom Kippur. The kohanim duchen on Yom Kippur. Some communities that had a minhag not to duchen when Yonta falls out on Shabbos. So on Yom Kippur, when it falls out on Shabbos, there were two minhagim, whether they would duchen or they wouldn't duchen. Okay, the reason why they wouldn't duchen, the din is, and the Mishnah is supposed to duchen every day. Whenever the Sibur requests of the Kohanim that they should duchen, so they're obligated to duchen. So the minhag by the Ashkenazim developed that they don't, in Chutz L'Aretz, We don't request of the Kohanim to Duchen on any other day other than Yomim Tovim. Why? Because the Zohar says that the Kohanim have to be in a good mood when they're giving brachas. If they're not in a happy mood, they don't give the brachas with a full heart. That's why they say, so they have to recite the blessings with a full heart. So all week long, all year long, they're busy with parnasa. And even on Shabbos, they're also worried about parnasa. So on Yontif, they're more relaxed. So that's the official explanation that's given in Shulchan Aruch. So then there were communities where they had a minig that when Yontif falls on Shabbos, they would not duchen. Why? So one of the explanations given is that in those communities they had a minig that a kohen who was with his wife, who was a balkeri, is not allowed to duchen, and married people are supposed to have the mitzvah zaynas Friday night. So when Yontif falls out on Shabbos, so he's got balkeri, he probably didn't go to mikveh in the morning. The chassidim go to mikveh every day, but Shulchan Aruch was written before the days of the chassidim. They didn't go to mikveh every day. So they don't permit a balkeri. There is no such din. The din is that a balkeri is permitted to duchen. But those communities, they had such a minig. So on Yom Kippur, no one's going to be a balkeri. Also the Tashmish Amito. So that's why many communities, even though they only duchen on Yontif, and Yontif falls on Shabbos, they wouldn't duchen. When Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, they would duchen. In other communities, they insisted, no, that even Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbos, even though the reason doesn't apply, you still don't duchen. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't allow the whole thing at all. The Shulchan Aruch is against it. The Shulchan Aruch says that you have to duchen even when Yontif falls out on Shabbos. He told the students once in class that when he came first to Boston, he was the rabbi, officially he was the chief rabbi of the whole city of many different shuls. So he says, Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos that year. And Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos. And he was young, and he was very had a sharp tongue. He had a sharp tongue even years later, till he became a very old man. And he screamed at the Kohanim, and as he said in Yiddish, Chob ze harayin gezogt, and taten staten harayin, he insulted them, and he gave them over the head. And he says he won the fight, and he lost his job. He says before Yom Kippur, he was fired. He's no longer the chief rabbi of the whole city, because they didn't want such a meshugana. He's screaming at them. So he told his boys, make sure that the Kohanim duchen in your shul, even when Yontif falls on Shabbos, but it's not worth losing your position over that issue. There are other issues that you have to give up your position, not over duchening over Shabbos. So the din is that the Kohanim have to wash their hands. This is a din and din more. The Kohanim have to wash their hands with a cup of water before they duchen. So how do they wash their hands on Yom Kippur? So the answer is, that's b'makom mitzvah, so there's no prohibition. Based on a passage in the Zohar, many Levim have a practice. The Levim who pour the water on the Kohanim's hands have a practice of pouring water on their own hands first. They wash the Tilas Yadayim on their own hands before they pour the water on the Kohanim's hands. So it says in the Matei Ephraim, and Matei Ephraim is the official sefer on Hilchas Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's written by Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius, who lived in the early 1800s. He was a contemporary of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, and he had tshuvas with the Mishkan Is Yankif and many others, Rabbi Kiveger. So Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius wrote several svarim that are very fundamental, very basic. So Matei Ephraim is one of them. It's quoted by the Mishnah Berurah on every page in Hilchas Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He always has the final say and everything. So he quotes this passage from the Zohar that if the practice is that the Levim wash their hands before they wash the Kohanim's hands, so they should do this practice even on Yom Kippur. That's called Rechitza Shal Mitzvah. When you wake up in the morning, you wash until Tilas Yadayim. So that's also, Taisa says that that's permissible. Whenever the Rechitza is obligatory, or if a person's hands are dirty, let's say you diaper the baby. A person diapers, sometimes the father diapers the baby, sometimes the mother diapers the baby. So when you diaper a baby, your fingers are dirty. So you're permitted to wash your hands. You go to the bathroom and your hands are dirty, so you have to wash your hands.
Your whole hand or like your knuckles, like it's For they wash their entire hands, or is it a certain level? Or?
You see, when you wake up in the morning, or you wash for bread, so there is a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi's opinion is you have to wash till the wrist, and Tosfos says Rashi is wrong. You only have to wash till the knuckle. So all year long, we in America we have a faucet. In Europe they didn't have a faucet. They have a faucet. What's the problem? So spend a little more pour water on the whole hand till the knuckles. On Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, when you're not allowed to bathe the body unnecessarily, so we follow the Ikar Adin. The Ikar Adin is only washed till the knuckles. When it comes to the Kohanim Duchening, that's also a dispute Rashi and Tosfos. So, because the Gemara just says, when you wash your bread, you wash till this joint, and when you wash to the Kohanim, you wash till that joint. And we don't have the diagrams. Gemara just says till here, till there. We don't know what it is. So Rashi says when the kohen of duchen have to wash till the elbow. Nobody ever does that. So Tosis is the lenient position. Tosis says the kohen have to wash till the wrist. So that's why it says in Shulchan Aruch Yom Kippur in the morning everybody washes till the knuckles, except for kohanim who plant the duchen in the morning. So they should wash them when they wake up in the morning on Yom Kippur. They should wash till the wrist, because the minig is when they're going to wash again before they duchen, they don't say a bracha. They rely, there's a dispute whether they have to wash immediately before duchening, or they can rely on the Netilas Yadam that they did in the morning. So since there's a dispute, so we require they should wash, but they don't recite a bracha on Netilas Yadam. So to rely on the Netilas Yadam that they did in the morning is only if the Kohanim washed till the wrist. So Kohanim who plant the duchen on Yom Kippur should wash till the wrist, unless they're not going to duchen until Musaf. Musaf is going to be doomsday. Musaf is going to be 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they'll probably go to the bathroom before then. They'll have to wash their hands in between anyway. So then they shouldn't wash till the wrist in the morning. That until it's a dime will not be oila.
So only in Israel where they do the
duchen shachris. They're doing the duchen shachris, or down the hill over here they duchen shachris also. Yeah.
But the kohanim in Chusar, except over there,
up the hill,
wash to their knuckles in the morning. Not kohanim, not. Yeah.
Right, because they're not going to duchen. Before they're going to duchen in Musaf, they probably have to go to the bathroom. So then the Netilas Yadayim in the morning isn't going to help. Right. So whenever the Netilas Yadayim is necessary, whenever a person, the hands are dirty, so then you're allowed to wash. Wearing shoes on Yom Kippur is prohibited. Wearing shoes on Tish B'Av is also prohibited. So the Gemara has a dispute. What's the definition of a shoe, al pi din? The question is, when a married woman, when a couple is married, the husband dies and leaves no children, so the wife is not permitted to remarry until she has chalitza. So you have to do chalitza on a shoe. The Yavama has to remove the shoe from the right foot of her brother-in-law, the surviving brother of the husband who passed away. So does the shoe have to be made from leather, or if the shoe protect, let's say in Holland, they used to go with wooden shoes, whatever, Crocs, whatever, if you have socks, so socks don't really protect the feet. So socks are not considered na'al, that's for sure. But if you have, let's say, sneakers made from some material other than leather, so that's a dispute in the Talmud. The machlokes and the Tanoim on the level of the rice, is that considered a sandal or is not considered a sandal? So on Yom Kippur, it's the same machlokes, and it's a dispute in the Rishonim how to paskin. So the generally accepted opinion is that you're allowed to wear sneakers on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur in the middle of Shiva. One is in Avela Shiva, is not permitted to wear leather shoes. So we usually assume that they're permitted to wear sneakers. There is a minority opinion that even if the shoes are not made from leather, but they really protect the foot, that it's also not permissible. So that's why you'll have some people will wear sneakers when they walk on the street, but when they come to shul, they'll take off the sneakers and they'll just sit in the shul the whole time with their socks. Because the sneakers is a machlekes. Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to recommend that you should be machmer not to wear sneakers with an arch in them. If you have an arch on the bottom that protects the bottom of the foot, the Rambam sounds like that's not permissible.
Wouldn't that be a problem when davening Shmur Esrei because you're kind of like barefoot? Isn't there something that you have to have something called, like at least sandals when you daven Shmur Esrei?
No. You have to dress decently. So if it's a normal society in America where people normally dress, you have to dress formally for davening. So you have to have whatever is formal, a jacket, a tie, a shirt, trousers, shoes, whatever is considered formal. On Yom Kippur, you got no choice. So you have to dress nicely, minus the shoes. You can't wear the shoes. Everyone has to dress however you would appear in front of the President of the United States. You wouldn't appear in shorts and you wouldn't appear in sneakers. You would wear normal shoes. But on Yom Kippur, you got no choice. So you can't wear the shoes. So that's some suggest that since according to the Rambam, all the chamishi inuyim are deraisa, so that's why there's room to be machmer over here, not to use sneakers on Yom Kippur. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik used to recommend, that people should be machmer, not to wear sneakers with arches. They should be flat on the bottom. On Yom Kippurim, we recite an awful lot of slichas, before Yom Kippur also, before Rosh Hashanah we start. Our tradition has it that it was on Yom Kippur that HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally proclaimed Salachti Kidvarecha. He told Moshe Rabbeinu that he's forgiving the sin of the Jewish people, that they sinned with the Chet HaEgel. And he taught Moshe Rabbeinu this secret Vayav Hashem upon him, Ika Hashem Hashem kel rachme chanon. So the Gemara interprets the pasuk, Malamish in the satav Hakadosh Baruch Hu kishliach tzibur, that Hakadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the vision was as if Hakadosh Baruch Hu was a chazan, was a shliach tzibur. He wore a talis, and he recited Yud Gimel Midas, and he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kol zman shebar echotim, when the Jewish people will ever sin, Yasa lefanik yaseid hazer, let them recite slichas vani moichalehem, and I will forgive their sins. It doesn't happen automatically if a person does tshuva. If he doesn't do tshuva, so then the reciting of Yud Gimel Midas doesn't help. So because this was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, the idea to recite Yud Gimel Midas, and if one does tshuva, then the sins are forgiven. This was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu on Yom Kippurim. So that's why the minig developed that we recite an awful lot of slichas on Yom Kippur after Ma'ariv. Then in the middle of Ma'ariv doesn't have Chazaras HaShatz. Then in the middle of Shacharis and Musaf and Mincha and the Ilah, in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz, so we recite a lot of slichas. The reciting of the Yud Gimel Midas Hashem Hashem Kel Rach Mechana was a major dispute in the days of the early Achronim, whether this has the status of Davish Bigdusha or not. There is a Mishnah in Megillah at the end of the second parak, when the Mishnah says that in order to recite Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu, you require a minyan, and the Yerushalmi says whenever we recite the Davish Bigdusha, Kaddish Kedusha Baruch Hu, he's supposed to recite it in a standing position ba'amida. So that's why there was an ongoing debate reciting Yud Gimel Midas. Let's say a person is not in shul, he doesn't feel well, he has to daven home. Does he have the right to recite Yud Gimel Midas without a minyan or not? So it's usually assumed that not, because we treat the Yud Gimel Midas as if it were a Davish Bigdusha, and that's why we require, number one, a minyan; number two, amida, you have to stand for Davish Bigdusha, that's the Yerushalmi; and number three, the early Achreinim from the 1500s add on, 1600s they add on, that you need atifa, that one should, the proper thing is one should wear his talis over his head when they're reciting that part of the slichas, the Hashem Hashem kel rachem echanu. On Erev Yom Kippur, we mentioned last week, but we're discussing a little bit about Rosh Hashanah. On Erev Yom Kippur, according to all opinions, there is a mitzvah to be mosif mechol al hakodesh. Tosefas Yom Kippurim is lochol hadeis. The Gemara learns it out from the pasuk. It says, "B'tisha lachodesh b'erev." It says, "V'nisimas nafshasech." We should start the fast. "B'tisha lachodesh b'erev." On the 9th of Tishrei, late in the afternoon. But the tannis of Yom Kippur doesn't begin till Asiri. So the Gemara says yes, but the pasuk means there's a mitzvah lahosif mechol al hakodesh. One should start fasting on erev Yom Kippur, but tisha lachodesh b'erev, on the ninth of Tishrei, towards the afternoon, late in the afternoon. And the same is true regarding Tosefes liacharehu as well. Then the Gemara proceeds to say that not only does Tosefes apply to Yom Kippurim, it applies to every Shabbos and every Yom Tov. So the Rambam does not accept that line in the Gemara. We spoke last week, the Rambam only paskins the din of Tosefas Yom Kippurim lefaneho liachreho, and on Shabbos and Yontif he never writes that there's a requirement to have Tosefas, not men Atar, not men Rabbanan, and doesn't even seem to think that if you volunteer to be Moisif on your own, the Rambam seems to hold that it's simply not chal. There is no such thing as Tosefas, just not chal, it's meaningless. So because the Rambam only records the din of Tosefes by Yom Kippur, when the Shulchan Aruch quotes Tosefes' opinion that there is a requirement to be Moisim Mechol al HaKodesh and every Shabbos, every Yom Tov, so the Shulchan Aruch writes Yesh Omrim, because he knows that the Rambam is Aymit Keneget, so it's a Yesh Omrim. But that's the correct practice, that one should really be Moisim Mechol al HaKodesh every Shabbos, every Yom Tov, Tosefes Lefaneha and Tosefes Liachareha. How much Tosefes Lefaneha? So last week we spoke a little bit. Rav Soloveitchik mentioned that where he came from in Europe, they used to bench licht on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontif 30 minutes before the Shkia. There was Tosefes a half an hour. And on Erev Yom Kippur, they used to bench licht, they used to light the candles an hour before. So he remembered as a child, he asked, why is Yom Kippur different? So they said 30 minutes for Tosefes for Malacha and 30 minutes for Tosefes for the Inuyim. And he said he didn't understand what that means. The Malach and the Inuyim all blend in together. It's all one package deal of Kedushas Hayom of Yom Kippur. What do you mean you need 30 minutes for Tosefes of Malacha, 30 minutes for Tosefes of Inuyim? He didn't understand that. So that's what's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. One should be Moisim Mechol al HaKodesh on Yom Kippur, that's L'chol HaDeis, and on Shabbos and Yontav, that's most of the Rishayim in disagreement with the Rambam. The Gemara says that when one recites Shech Yonu late in the afternoon on Erev Yom Kippurim, L'kavod Yom Kippur, that is an automatic Tosefes Yom Kippurim Bal Korchai. We mentioned last week that sometimes many women have the practice that they recite Shech Yonu when they light Neiris Yontav, and Neiris Yom Kippurim, so once you say Shech Yonu, then for sure it's Tosefes Yom Kippur. You're not permitted to do Malach after that. If a woman lights Neir Shabbos on a regular Shabbos, she says Baruch Lahadik Neir Shabbos, so we are Machmel Lachatchile for the opinion of the Sefer Halachas Gedolos. He lived in the days of the Gaonim. Halachas Gedolos is quoted by the Rishonim that he felt that whenever you Madlik Es Haneris on Erev Shabbos, that's already an automatic Tosefes Shabbos. So Lachatchile went Machmel for his opinion that the women who light candles should not do Malach after Hadlokas Haneris, but if it's a big Shas Hadchak, then we would be makel that if the woman makes a Tanai in advance, she has in mind when she lights Ner, it's not to be Mekabel Tosefes Shabbos, so then we permit it to do Malach. We don't really follow the opinion of the Halachos Gedolos. Lachatchile were Machmefrit, but B'Shas Hadchak we makel. But if it's Erev Yom Kippur, or any other Erev Yontif for that matter, and the woman recites Shech Yonah already, so that's a Gemara. That's the Gemara in Erevin on Daf Mem and Beis, that once you say Shech Yonu, then it's already considered Tosefes Yom Kippur, whether you like it or not.
Where does Hefen Erev come from?
That we mentioned last week, the Tosefes and Beitza Daf Lamin Omid Aleph says, if you study the Gemara there on Daf Lamin Omid Aleph, it would appear that there is Tosefes Shabbos has some minimum amount of time. But Tosefes says they can't figure out what the amount of time it is. It's not a mashu, some significant amount of time. But they don't know what it is. On that Daf Lamed Amad Aleph and Beitza, there's a Tosefes Rabbeinu Peretz, which we have now in print. Years ago, the Achronim from the 1800s quoted it from manuscript. Now we have it available in print. That he suggests that it should be 30 minutes. The Tosefes should be 30 minutes, because 30 minutes is considered Samach. Samach Lemincha Gedolah, Samach Lemincha Ktana. Samach Le Shabbos, he should be Mekabel Shabbos. So the Shir of Samach is often 30 minutes. The Mishnah in Pesachim, there's 10 Prakim in Masechet Pesachim, so there's one Perek in the middle of Pesachim that's called Perek Mokim Shenohagu. And it talks about the obligation to observe Minhagim. And the Mishnah recognizes that different communities have different Minhagim, and each community should observe their Minhagim. And the question is, what is the basis? What's the basis of this obligation to observe Minhagim? So the Mishnah records, Mokim Shenod Lahadlik Neres and Erev Yom Kippur Madlikim, Mokim Shenogon Shalol Lahadlik Neres Ein Madlikim. What it's telling us is that on every Shabbos and Yontif, there is an obligation to light Neris. Bamei Madlikin and Bamei Madlikin. There is an obligation to light, and we always recite a bracha. Tosfos has a machlokes and Bamei Madlikin on the opening Mishnah, whether one recites a bracha or not. By us, it's so mikubal that one recites a bracha when lighting Neris Shabbos that we refer to it in Yiddish as lich benchen. A benchen means to recite the blessing over lighting the candles. Not everybody agrees that you say a bracha. Half of the Bali Atosis didn't say a bracha. But by us, it's so accepted, so we refer to it as a bench and licht. You recite the blessing as you're lighting the candles. On Erev Yom Kippur, it's clear in the Mishnah that there's no takhanas chachamim. There is no medina. One is not obligated to light neiris. It depends on the minhag hamakom. What is the minhag hamakom, whether yes or no? So the Gemara explains in Sochem and Perek Makom Shenogu that all of the communities are based on the same consideration. One of the Chamisha Inuyim on Yom Kippurim is Tashmish Amitah. So there is a din that a husband is not permitted to be with his wife if there's a light on in the bedroom. Some communities had a minhag that they light a ner on Erev Yom Kippur and they leave the light that they lit in the bedroom. So this will prevent them from having Tashmish Amitah. In other communities, the minhag was just the reverse. His wife is so good looking, he's going to have the light, if he's going to have a candle burning in the bedroom, he may have a desire to be with his wife. So that's why the meaning was bedavka, not to light any candles. When they come home from shul, it's dark, and he's not going to be able to see how good looking his wife is. So this will deter him. This will prevent him from violating that inuy of Tashmish Amit. So the Gemara explains that it's only for married people. Single people, it does make sense they should have a minhag. The married people, they had a minhag to light. Our minhag is that we light the Neiris on Erev Yom Kippur. So because it's only a minhag, so that's why there's a dispute between Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Sfardim follow the Shulchan Aruch that one does not recite the bracha when observing a minhag. Reciting of Chatzi Halal on Rosh Chodesh, the Gemara says, is only a minhag. Reciting of Halal on Yontif is a real din. It's a question whether it's a din min HaTorah, din min HaRabbanan, but that's a real din. Reciting Chatzi Halal on Rosh Chodesh, the Gemara says explicitly, in the end, the Maseches Tainus is only a minhag. So the Mechaber writes for the Svardim, Rabbi Yisakar writes, in his opinion, is followed by the Svardim, that no bracha is recited over Chatzi Halal on Rosh Chodesh, or on Chol HaMoed Pesach for that matter. And the Ramah writes for the Ashkenazim that the practice of the Balei HaTos is that one does recite a bracha, even when only fulfilling a minhag. The one minhag that you don't say a bracha, that's L'chol HaDeis. The Gemara says, the minhag of clapping Hoshainus, Chibat Arava, and Al Shana Rabbi, the Gemara says, it's a minhag and a bracha is not recited. So it's based on that that the Sfardim developed their position that one does not recite a bracha when fulfilling a minhag. And the Ashkenazim say, no, that's a different kind of a minhag, and a normal minhag, like reciting Chatzi Halal, or lighting Neiros on Erev Yom Kippur, one would recite a bracha. So the Shulchan Aruch has this machlokes, the Mechaber and the Ramah have this machlokes. When you light the candles on Erev Yom Kippur, the Sfardim would not recite a bracha, and the Ashkenazim would. So then the Mechaber writes, Rabbi Yosef Kara writes, but even the Sfardim who normally not recite a bracha, if it's Yom Kippur, Shecholi is B'Shabbos this year, so of course you have to say a bracha because it's Hadlokas on Neiros of Erev Shabbos, so that everybody agrees that that's a chayva. So that's really problematic. Why the Mechaber writes that that's L'chol HaDeis? Because the whole reason why the Mishnah distinguishes between Shabbos and Yom Tov on the one hand and Yom Kippur on the other hand is because Shabbos and Yom Tov, normally you eat a meal. So you want to have lights in order to enjoy eating the meal. Yom Kippur, there is no meal. So that's why the Chachamim never required that you should light a candle. So that's why it depends on the Minhag HaMakom. So Yom Kippur, Shecholi is B'Shabbos, also there's no meal. So Mikra Adin, it doesn't make sense that the Shulchan Aruch should write L'chol HaDeis. You're obligated to light Neiros on Yom Kippur, Shechol Shabbos. L'chol HaDeis, you recite a bracha. You should be totally in the same machlekes. So the Vilna Gaon points it out. It's problematic. The Pasuk says, on Yom HaKippurim, the Kohen Gadol has to bring the special Karbonis, Ki B'Yom HaZeh Chapar Lechem Tareschem Kochat Tesechem Lefnei Hashem Titoru. So there's a question, how do you translate that phrase? So the Rosh, in the end of Maseches Yuma, quotes the practice of Rav Sadia Gaon, that everyone should go to Mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur, and they should recite a bracha, Shekadishana b'mitzos v'tzivano al hatfilo. So the Rosh says, where in the world does this come from? That you have to recite a bracha and go to Mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. So he's groping as they're trying to figure out what the source is. So he says, there's a Gemara in the first parak in Rosh Hashanah. Chai vodam letaher atzmo beregel. Everybody has to go to Mikveh before Yontif in order to be tohar on Yontif. So apparently Rav Sadia Gaon is of the opinion that that din doesn't only apply beregel. Chai vodam taratz beregel means sholosh regalim. Pesul shosug even applies to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Rosh thinks that it doesn't make any sense. The Rosh says the whole reason why Chai Vodam Tairatzma Beregel is because this mancha beis hamigdash hayakayam, the people would be oila regel, the men had to appear in the Azara. So when you appear in the Azara, you have to be tohar. So of course you have to go to Mikveh before Yontif. But on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, there never was an obligation to appear in the Azara. And as man is even at Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, there is no Azara. We can't go into the Azara. We're all tmeim. No one's going to go anywhere. So the Rosh doesn't understand this whole Rav Sadia Gaon. What is he talking about that? You say a bracha when you go to Mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. So Dor HaShulchan writes, and that's what others write as well. No, the Rav Sadia Gaon apparently thinks this is a different din. He must have translated Lefnei Hashem Titoru as one is about to enter into the Kedushas Yom HaKippurim. Lefnei Hashem, before you enter into Yom Kippur, Titoru, you should purify your bodies by going to Mikveh. A new mitzvah. The Rav Sadia Gaon has a poem, a piyut, where he lists off what in his mind are the 613 mitzvahs. So he writes this mitzvah in the poem, that there's a mitzvah to go to Mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. He doesn't write it the way the Rosh wrote it, as this, it's in the context of Chai Varam Taratz Mabaregel. You have to go to Mikveh on every Erev Yontif. No, it's only on Yom Kippur. So it sounds like it must be based on the Pasuk, Lefnei Hashem Titohar. It's usually assumed, not like the Rosh understood, Shagasaria has a whole tshuva where he writes the whole din of Chayavadam Taratz Mabaregel simply doesn't apply Bizman Azet, it's only Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash HaYikayim, it only applies on Sholosh Regalim. And it's usually assumed, not like Rav Sad, you're going, there's a new mitzvah in our Torah that everyone has to go to a kosher mikvah and erev Yom Kippur. What's usually assumed is that in Aseres Meitshuvah, we machmer our things that all year long we make alon. So all year long there used to be a takonis Ezra. Ezra made 10 takonis. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, in the end of Perek Merubah, quotes a whole list, all the Esa takonis of Ezra. So one of the takonis of Ezra is that if a man is a balkeri, he's not allowed to learn and he's not allowed to daven. So this takana didn't have too much mazel. It was too difficult to observe that. Over the years they tried to observe it, but it was difficult. So after several centuries, the Gemara says, in the days of the Tanoim, they did away with that takana sezer. They saw that it's in Rabatzi Bechalim Lamed Boy, so they abolished that takana sezer. And they said it based on, they abolished it based on a pasuk that says in Novi Haloko Dvariko Eish Niyum Hashem, that the words of God are like fire. Just like fire is, can't be makabel tuma. The only four things that are makabel tuma: adam, mikela, mochel, mamashkim. Fire is not an item that's makabel tuma. Avdi v'tera ain't makabel tuma. So what does it bother you if a person is a balkari and is going to learn Torah? So that's what it says in the Gemara. When the Tanoim, when the early Tanoim abolished this takana sezra, they did so based on that pasuk that divrei Torah not makabel tuma, just like geisha is not makabel tuma. So the Gemara never says explicitly that they abolished takana sezra with respect to davening. It just says the abolished takana says it with respect to learning Torah. Never says with respect to davening. With respect to davening is a machlekes the Hasidim in the Misnagda. Whether we did away with takana says for davening or not. Where did the Hasidim get their idea from? So the Rambam writes, God in heaven will testify, that's what he writes in the Mishnah Torah. God in heaven will testify that I always go to mikveh before I daven. He was really a chosid, a closet chosid. But he says, Mikra din, you don't have to. So Mikra din, you don't have to. So what is he machmer about? So the Kesem Mishnah discusses that. Okay, commentaries discuss that. So the Rambam is of the opinion that when they abolished Takana Sezra for learning, they abolished Takana Sezra for davening as well. And the Ravid disagrees with the Rambam. We don't have the Ravid printed on the side of the Rambam in the Hasogas HaRambam, in the Hasogas on the Rambam, but the Rosh in Brochus quotes the Ravid as disagreeing with the Rambam. The Hasidim followed the Ravid that with respect to davening, Takana Sezra was never abolished and a Balkari is not permitted to daven. So usually the minig is that people go to mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur, we're machmer for the opinion of the Ravid. Aseres Meitshuva, we're machmer. So that's why the minig usually is that you don't have to go, a Balkari who wants to go to mikvah to be permitted to daven doesn't have to have davke kosher a mikvah. Even if it's Maim Shuvim, the Gemara says it's also sufficient to take off Takana Sezra. If you're going to Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur because of Rav Sad Yigoin's opinion, of Nei Hashem Tetor, it's a biblical requirement that has to be a kosher mikveh. So you have to have a kosher mikveh that's not Maim Shuvim. But if the whole idea of going to mikveh is only because of Takana Sezra, and although all year long we follow the Ramam's opinion that Takana Sezra was totally abolished, not only for davening, not only for Talmud Torah, but for Tefillah as well, and Seris made tshuva with machmer for Yom and Avraham and machmer, so it's enough to be machmer to have a men's mikveh, even though it is maim shuvim. So there are different practices as far as that is concerned.
Wouldn't a shower qualify for that?
A shower, the Gemara says, if a person is a chayla, so if they pour gimelugim, if they pour teshakabin of water on him, that would be acceptable. But if a person is not a chayla, then it's not right. Then he should really be toivel in a mikveh of avoyim saw. The Ramban also reads the pasuk lefnei Hashem tetoru, as one is about to enter into Yom Kippur, he should purify himself. But he doesn't interpret it like Rav Sad Yigoin tetoru, that he should be toivel in a mikveh, but rather tetoru, one should cleanse himself by reciting vidui. So the Ramban in his chidushim on the end of Maseches Yuma comments on the Gemara towards the very end, next to the last daf in Yuma. The Gemara says that you really ought to recite vidui as Yom Kippur is about to enter, but we're afraid that people are going to be eating Suda Mapsekes and then they're going to miss it. They're going to eat Suda Mapsekes till they run to shul. It already will be sunset and they won't have a chance to recite vidui before Yom Kippur comes in. So that's why we moved up the vidui to be recited after Mincha before the Suda Hamapsekes. Maybe the Suda Hamapsekes will take them so long till they finish benching, till they come to shul, they won't say the vidui. So the Ramban interprets that Gemara that the whole thing is based on this pasuk in Chumash. Lifnei Hashem titaru. You should purify yourselves by reciting vidui. Do the tshuva and recite the vidui before knesis hayayim of Yom HaKippurim. So the Chachamim moved it up to recite the vidui after mincha before the Suda Mavsekas. But more correct is, that's how the Magen Avraham quotes from the Shaloh, from the Sefer Shnei Luchos HaBris, based on the Ramban. The Shaloh recommends that one, if one comes to shul early enough, after the Suda Mavsekas, one should repeat the vidui again. So in yeshiva, many people have the practice of reciting the long vidui of the Chaye Yodam, that's printed in many machzorim, and many people recite Sham Nebagadam and Al-Chayt, and then they recite the vidui of the Chaye Yodam. Different minhagim, but it's all based on this Ramban. What is Kol Nidre all about? So the old version of Kol Nidre always used to be that it's a Hataras Nedarim. We're matter the Nedarim that we took Yom Kippurim She'ovar Ad Yom Kippurim Hazeh. What are we doing Hataras Nedarim on Erev Yom Kippur? What does it have to do with Yom Kippur? That's a big problem. So the explanation is usually given based on a passage in the Zohar that Chacham Oikar HaNedem Meikoroi, the Gemara says, that if the husband or the father is mefer, his wife's or his daughter's neder, hafar is only mikana lahabo. The neder was binding until the time that the father says, I dissolve it, and from now on the neder is no longer binding. But if a person goes to the chacham and explained, I made a mistake, I didn't realize what was involved. If I would have really fully realized, I would never have taken the neder. Then the chacham says, mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. So the chacham is paskening his mutter. It's not that he's absolving him of the neder. He's paskening the neder was always a neder betoyes, and from day number one, it was never binding. So the chacham is like, a neder meikor, comes out there never was a neder. So we act out the hataras and dharma on Erev Yom Kippur because there's such a concept in tshuva also, that if a person does a good tshuva, it's considered as if it's oike the avera meikor, it's considered as if the avera was never an avera, as if the avera was really a mitzvah. As if the Avera was done b'shoigeg. The Gemara says it depends how well he does the tshuva. If a person does a weaker form of tshuva, so the Averas that were done b'meiz, it's done, it's not in log kishkogas. It's considered as if the Avera was done b'shoigeg. If he does a higher level of tshuva, so then it's done, it's not in log kizuchuyas. It's considered as if they were mitzvahs. So the tshuva can be oiker es Avera l'mafreya. So that's what in many of the Nusach Sfarad Machzorim, the Chassidish in Nusach Sfarad Machzorim, not the Eidot HaMizrach. So they have this passage from the Zohar where a parallelism, where this parallel is drawn between Hatoros Nedorim and the Tshuva. That just like Hatoros Namazoike, the Avera Meikorai, just like Hatoros Namazoike, the Neda Meikorai, so too Tshuva can be Oike, the Avera Meikorai. We mentioned just the other day here in another class in the Yeshiva that some professor of Jewish history in Germany 150 years ago published an essay where he documented that every year on Yom Kippur there used to be a parade in Alexandria in Egypt, parade in on the part of the Orthodox Jews in support of the Torah Shebaal Peh, because they were dealing with Karoim, Karaites, who didn't recognize the Torah Shebaal Peh. So they used to have the annual parade supporting Torah Shebaal Peh was on Yom Kippur. So this professor thinks that maybe that's the reason why they introduced Kol Nidre, because the Mishnah, the last line in the first parak in Chagiga, describes Hetan Adorim that it's Parchim Bo Avir. It's pure Torah Shebaal Peh, Vein Lehem Al Meshe Yismocho. You can't even latch it onto a pasuk. You can't even read it in between the lines. And the way the Beis Halevi writes in the Sefer, and others suggest that there are two holidays in the Jewish calendar. Both celebrate Kabbalas HaTorah. Shavuot celebrates Kabbalas Torah Shebichsav, and Yom Kippur celebrates Kabbalah's Torah Shebaal Peh. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchas the second time around, so that's when God instituted the whole concept of Torah Shebaal Peh. So that's the old version of Kol Nidre was where Matan Neder, all the Nedarim that were taken in the past. The Rabbeinu Tam's father, who was the son-in-law of Rashi, Rabbeinu Meir, Rabbeinu Tam's older brother was the Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Meir. So Rabbeinu Meir was the son-in-law of Rashi. So he changed the reading in Kol Nidre. He said it's not a Hataras Nedarim L'Sho'avar, it's a declaration in advance. Any Nedarim which we will take in the course of the coming year, Yom Kippurim Zeh, Yom Kippurim Haba, Leino L'Tayv, until next Yom Kippur, should be null and void. And it's based on a passage in the Gemara in the middle of Nedarim, Adav Chabes, that if a person gets up in the beginning of the year, he says Erev Yom Kippur is not exactly the beginning of the year, but it's Aseres Me'etshuva. So if a person gets up in the beginning of the year and he makes a declaration, any nidorim that I will take in the course of the year should be null and void. So this sometimes is effective. There are a lot of details, but sometimes it'll be effective. So the Chayyadim recommends that one should recite the both versions, and many here in the yeshiva, they have that practice, that the Chazan says, all the Nidorim that we took from last Yom Kippur to this Yom Kippur, and all the Nidorim which we plan to take from this Yom Kippur to next year's Yom Kippur, to include both the Hataras and Dorim L'Sha'ovar, as well as a declaration L'Habo. When Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, this year it falls on Shabbos, so the most have the minig, as is mentioned in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, that you don't say, when you say L'Kenu, 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 you don't say Ritzei Bim L'Chaseinu. You just say, because if you're fasting on Shabbos, the menucha is not in a normal fashion. Ritzei Bim L'Chaseinu is on a normal Shabbos. But when Yom Kippur falls on a Shabbos, you leave out Ritzei Bim L'Chaseinu. Others don't have that practice, but most have that practice. Yeah. What is Ne'ilah all about? So the Gemara, the Yerushalmi explains that Ne'ilah is based on the concept of Ribui Tefillah. That if you daven more for the same thing, you stand a better chance of having your prayers answered. If somebody asks me 100 times to please take care of something, so for sure this guy is a nudnik, I'm not going to take care of it. And the Rabbanu Shalom told us that he doesn't run his business like that. The more you ask him, so the more you stand the chance of having your prayers answered. Kam kisarba sfilo eneni shemeya yidechem domim aleyo. The Rishalmi quotes many psukim from Tanakh that indicate that this is the way God runs the world. That the more you ask, so the Midrashim say Moshe Rabbeinu offered hundreds and hundreds of prayers that he should be permitted to cross over the Yarden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him not to continue davening on the matter anymore. So that's what Ne'ilah is based on. In the Mishnah it says the Kohanim are supposed to duchen when you daven Ne'ilah. The question is, when is the correct Zman of Ne'ilah? So the Gemara has different opinions. So one opinion is you can start Ne'ilah at night, Hamitzoy Yom Kippur. We don't follow that opinion. We pass like the opinion. The Ne'ilah should be recited by Yom. So then there are two opinions within that. So we are Mekel as long as you start Ne'ilah by Yom, even though you finish Balayla, that's good enough. Others have the practice that the Chazan finishes the Chazaras Hashatz of Ne'ilah by Yom. You have to finish. That would be more correct. But we don't do that because the common conception is that as soon as Ne'ilah is over, you blow shofar and everybody goes and they eat. So if we're going to finish Ne'ilah before the Shkia, we're afraid people are going to eat. So we don't follow that. So by the time the Chazan gets towards the end of Ne'ilah, and it's time to Duchen, it's already in the middle of the night. So most of the Rishonim are of the opinion you cannot Duchen Balayla. The Duchening is like a form of Hakrobas Karbonis, like Avodah, and there's no Hakrobas Karbonis Balayla. So that's why they all write that in the Maharil is a sefer from the 1300s. Maharil records that only in Frankfurt, in Germany, they had the practice to duchen by Neil in the middle of the night, and everybody else doesn't understand it. So the Maharil answers it. He says there is no such din that you can't be makor karbonis balayla. Some karbonis may be brought by Lila, others not. So he says duchening is like akrobus karbonis, those karbonis that may be brought by Lila. That's how the Shagasari writes also. The Shagasari has a sefer on Maseches Tainis that's called Vuras Ari. So the very last essay in the whole sefer, this is where the sefer ends off in the middle of this essay. The last part of the paragraph is missing, but he's writing the same as the Maharil to defend the practice in Frankfurt that they do duchen by Ne'ilah. Anyway, the minig in most shuls is that you don't duchen in the middle of the night, so they won't be duchening by Ne'ilah. And here, in the community where they follow all the customs of Frankfurt, they do duchen in the middle of the night. The Gemara says that it's required in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz on Yom Kippur to recite the Seder HaAvodah. Our practice is we only recite the Seder HaAvodah in the middle of Musaf. There used to be communities, this is recorded in the Tshuva Sagan, there used to be communities, but they would recite the Seder HaAvodah in Shachris and Musaf and Mincha and Nila, all four tefillah by Yom. By Ma'ariv, there is no Chazaras Hashatz, but by the four Chazaras Hashatz in the daytime, that we recite Seder HaAvodah. The Beis Yosef has a whole page. Normally, you have the tour in the middle of the page, and the Beis Yosef is a commentary on the side. So there's one whole page in the volume of the Tur where there is no Tur. There's only Beis Yosef. And he corrects all of the mistakes in the text of the Seder HaVodah of Nusach Svara. In the days of Rabbi Yosef Karo in the 1500s, the text of the Seder HaVodah of Nusach Ashkenaz was more correct than the text of the Nusach Svara. But then Rabbi Yosef Karo corrected everything. He quotes all the corrections and they printed them. So after he corrected Nusach Svara, so now Nusach Svara is more correct than the Nusach Ashkenaz. So the Chayodim, who lived much later, the Chayodim lived towards the last years of the Vilna Gaon. He was a Mechutna of the Vilna Gaon, mentioned last week. So the Chayodim corrected the text of the Nusach Ashkenaz, but he wasn't successful in having it put into the Siddur. Rabbi Yosef Karo was successful. All the corrections that he wrote in his Beis Yosef, the printers of the Machzer put into the Machzer. The Chayodim was not successful. So as it stands now, the Nusach Ashkenaz has a lot of mistakes as far as what the Seder HaVodah is. More correct would be everyone should take a Chayodim and write all the corrections on the side of the Machzer. The Mishnah says that there's a Machlokes HaTanaim. What is the correct Zman? Oh, okay. Okay, I'm just going to finish with this one thing and then we're leaving. Thank you. The Mishnah says there's a Machlokes HaTanaim. When is this Zman to daven Musaf? So one Tana is of the opinion you have to daven Musaf before the end of Shor Shvius. That's an hour after Chatzos. So let's say Chatzos is approximately 12 o'clock. Now it's approximately 1 o'clock. So Shor Shvius would be till 2 o'clock. So you have to finish davening Musaf then. So we pass on Lachatchili should daven Musaf before the end of Shor Shvius, but B'nievet Kol Hayom. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that they should be careful not to dilly-dally in Shachris and Kriyas HaTorah, making so many Mishaberachs that you shouldn't begin to daven Musaf till after Shor Shvius is over. That's not correct. Then the commentaries add on, not only should you not begin Musaf after Shor Shvius, you should be careful to start Musaf before the half hour after Shor Shishis, because once it's already half an hour after Chatzos, it's already Higiyah Zman Mincha. And if a person wants to daven Mincha in Musaf, so the Gemara says that Torah V'Shein and Torah Kodem, you should daven Mincha first and then daven Musaf. And we're not going to do that. We're going to daven Musaf first and then Mincha. So you should see to it that that the Chazan, the Tzibur should get to start Musaf before a half an hour after Chatzos. My father was a rabbi all of his life, and I remember once in Shul, it was getting late, so the Chazan always used to sing Hineni, a whole theatrical production took 25 minutes. So he told the Chazan, no Hineni today. So Babat almost got a heart attack. That was the central theme of the whole davening, was the Hineni. So we had to dispense with the Hineni because it was too late. Okay.
Give his drasha after Moshe.
No.